This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
My partner says we have a loot of guests that continues this hour.
Already had one.
And we had a national champion. Four and by the way, real quickly, what is it? What are you doing? Four horsemen? What are you doing over there?
Four more guests.
I know. A loot of guests. But I will just say one thing. During the break, and we interviewed Makai yesterday after the show, and we were kidding around during the break. If you were in the squared circle against Makai Lewis, and you couldn't run, the point being you couldn't run, could you last 20 seconds against Makai Lewis without him either A, pinning you, or B, breaking a limb? Could you last 20 seconds against Makai Lewis?
Okay, well, he wrestles at 165, and he is 5'8", correct?
Yeah, 0% body fat, I'm guessing.
Oh, at least. So I would guess this, that Makai Lewis would have the real question would be, Makai Lewis, how fast would he have us on the mat?
Oh.
We start standing, how fast would he have us on the mat? I'm going to guess sub 5 seconds.
Oh, no doubt. As soon as he lays his hand on you, it's over, as Billy Packer would say. Over. It's over. I mean, can you imagine? He is a bad dude. Now, I'm telling you, if you've not seen him do his thing, he is awesome.
That's right.
But those wrestlers, that's why I like it. That's why I can't wait for the duels next week. Those dudes, man, and every time I see a soft-spoken, low-key guy, that means they're mean as a snake. That's what that means to me. Oh, boy, this is going to be a long day. When Mike Tyson was in his prime, and they'd ask him a question, and he'd give you that little soft, and then you see him fight, and you go, oh, for crying out loud. But Makai Lewis is a bad man. I can't wait for the duels next week. It's going to be great. Yep. All right, we got hoops, though, to address, Mr. Durham. It's a big weekend.
We do indeed. By the way, Friday night duels, Virginia Tech and North Carolina. Makai Lewis right there.
Excellent.
Debut next Friday night at 6 o'clock on ACC Network. Okay, so what do we think we get out of this weekend? Who has the most to prove, Pac, in your mind, when we start this round? I mean, we've talked about Virginia Tech. We've talked about Clemson, NC State, Louisville already. Are we waiting on Blue Bloods this weekend?
Yes.
Do we need to see a sharper, crisper Everett out of Duke?
Yep.
What about Carolina with Clemson? I mean, you know, I know the Tar Heels are favored, but let's be honest here. Clemson's the one playing with a lot of momentum, it looks like.
Yes. To me, that's why when you went through the list yesterday and you asked me for my upper glob, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who are alphas? Who could be? And I told you no on Duke and North Carolina. Based on what I have seen to date, I want to see more from Virginia, Duke, and North Carolina. The Heels have won two in a row. Duke, you know, it's been start, stop. We hadn't seen him play for 3 weeks. They got by BC. Right. I didn't think they were great, but they win the game. It's the only thing that matters. Virginia, you know, defensively doesn't look like the same Virginia team in the last couple of years. Will they get better? All of these teams are going to get better. So I would say, for me, sitting on the couch tomorrow, digging out of at least 5, 6, 7 snowflakes, I'm sensing that the Blue Bloods tomorrow are the ones that I want to see, all right, reinforce that you're a Blue Blood because you're a Blue Blood, right? North Carolina at home against Clemson. The Tigers are playing with, like you said, a ton of confidence, feel good about what they're doing, an older team. I want to see North Carolina now with back-to-back wins. What do you give me tomorrow night? Virginia, I just want to see them get back to playing Virginia basketball defensively where they just shut people down. And I haven't seen that yet. Like the other night, Wake shoots 63% in the first half, and you know it's up double digits and all that stuff. Duke just needs to kind of get into a rhythm of a game again, right? I mean, when you go 20 days without playing, you got the COVID stuff going on. Kay's not there. Hopefully he'll be there tomorrow. You're going to take on a Wake Forest team that we talked about. It was lost, 29 straight games or 25 straight or 29 straight against the ranked teams on the road. Hey, these are games that you got to figure, hey, Duke should be comfortable tomorrow. Virginia and BC, that's an interesting game. Does BC bounce back thinking, man, we should have won the Duke game? Or do they give you the Syracuse effort where they get beat by 50 at home? So, again, we're all over the place trying to analyze all this stuff. But for me personally, I want to see the Blue Bloods this weekend and what they deliver with Duke, North Carolina, and Virginia. That's on my list.
Yeah, I think if you're starting to look at Duke here, and I'll pull this up here just to make sure I got my reference point the right way. I mean, Matthew Hurt's averaging 18.5 points and 8.5 rebounds a ball game, right? Now, we know Jalen Johnson probably not in the lineup. DJ Stewart averaging 13 a game. Jalen Johnson, when he was healthy, was averaging about 11.5 and 8 rebounds. So, to me, the emergence of Duke, until Johnson returns and shows us he's 100%, the emergence really does fall on. That's why Wendell Moore's effort the other night was so critical.
Yep.
You needed to see a veteran guy put a big number up there. And I say veteran, and I understand he's a sophomore, but Wendell Moore's gone from being a role guy a year ago, and he needs to take a bigger presence on this team. So I think Wendell Moore is important. I also think, too, remember in our preseason conversation right as the year was beginning, and we were talking about Jordan Goldwire being the details guy for Duke, the leader, the defender, all those little things that maybe you expected, you know, Trey Jones, Tyus Jones, you know, guards of Duke's past to handle pack. That's what Jordan Goldwire now has to be. For Duke ultimately to be successful and run to the front of this deal, I think Goldwire and Moore become really, really critical. And whether it's Wake Forest or Navy pre-flight, those two guys need to continue to play better. And I think they have something to prove in that light tomorrow at noon here on ACC Network.
By the way, Wendell Moore is a sophomore, would be a veteran in this day of the one and dones, right? You think you're a sophomore year, you are a veteran. But, you know, listen, Duke doesn't win the game the other night if Wendell Moore doesn't come off the bench and give you 25.
That's right.
And he was terrific. I mean,
exactly
he was
right.
You know, he has had, you know, and people were talking about, well, he's not, can't make a shot. He lost his confidence. And he even said, when I saw the first one go in, all of a sudden, hey, ta-da, it dawned on me. He was outstanding. The other night, and Duke needed them because they're down 16 in the first half before making a run. And again, I expect Duke to beat Wake. I mean, the Deacs haven't won a game yet in the league. Boston College hasn't won a game yet in the league. And they've got Virginia. So again, you're talking about two Blue Bloods taking on two winless teams. They need to start looking the part. And I'm not saying, hey, if you don't look good, season's over. It's not what I'm saying at all. You need to just start building upon momentum, right? And for Duke, just getting back into flow of things, playing two games in 1 week is going to be like a godsend. And for Virginia, like I said, we're so used to watching the way they play, in which they just shut people down with such great defense. That's been lacking a little bit. And Tony Bennett would probably be the first one to tell you. So we're going to get some answers with those two. And, of course, North Carolina Clemson, the Heels are going to take on a team that's playing with a ton of confidence and now knows, hey, we can walk in the Smith Center and win a game, even though there won't be a soul there. So interesting games tomorrow.
I think that's right, and I'll offer you a veteran guy at Carolina that I think needs to take that next step, and that's Leaky Black. He can stand out there and knock down threes, which he did the other night, and that was a helpful situation at Miami.
Yep.
But again, as a junior, a veteran, here we go with veteran terms, talking about, you know, non-seniors, but Leaky Black is going to be a pivotal piece in what I think Carolina's future in the ACC this year will be. Why? Because you know De'Ron Sharp's talented. You know Garrison Brooks. It will eventually develop for him. I thought the free throws late the other night were really important for him mentally. But you can have Love and R.J. Davis and De'Ron Sharp, but at some point, the Leaky Black, the Garrison Brooks, that situation becomes critical if Carolina is going to do what you expect of Carolina. And you can easily identify guys. Like, we've talked about how big Amir Sims is, right? Amir Sims has become infinitely important to what Clemson is, not just on the floor, but off the floor. I mean, Brad Brownell talked about how good Amir is as a mentor with P.J. Hall the other day. Well, you can see Amir Sims being that critical to Clemson's success. Think about where NC State is and what Devin Daniels and D.J. Funderburk are doing for that team, Pac. I mean, those guys right now, the teams we're talking about, the Clemsons, the Louisvilles, the Virginia Techs, they've got pieces that you see all over the floor. They don't have stars. Remember what we said yesterday? You don't have that defining star in this league right now. That's why this league's not grabbing people nationally at the moment. But the thing about it is you got veteran guys that are going to be crucial to certain team success. And I think that's one of the things that we didn't think about early, because we just assumed it would be the role of like the last two or three years that we've had in ACC basketball.
Yeah, Funderburk the other night was outstanding for the Wolfpack, and getting him back in there and Manny Bates doing his thing, they're a problem. They're going to be a problem for everybody in the league. And I'm also interested to see what Miami does. I mean, Jim Larrañaga, for the last couple years,
got to get healthy first.
Right, with all the injuries and the issues he's had to put up with. And, you know, your four returning starters were out of the game, weren't even available the other night against North Carolina. And they've now had three consecutive absolute heartbreaking losses. They got to take it on the road against an NC State team that probably looked back at that Clemson game and said, man, we should have closed the deal. That was a winnable game for us. But yet, you know what? We can build upon this. So I want to see NC State make sure there's no hangover. If you're Miami, you want to still see the fight, but they've got to get healthy. It's going to be an uphill climb to begin with, but you got to get healthy. And again, listen, as hard as their team is playing with what they've got left, you give me a healthy Chris Likes for Miami, they could cause some. I think they can beat people. I really do. I think there's pieces there that I like. So it's an intriguing weekend, despite some cancellations and postponements. But we will have some more answers. When we get back here on Monday, God willing, it could be a really fascinating conversation of whether or not, hey, these teams like the Virginia Techs, the Clemsons, and NC States of the world, hey, forget about you think they're going to be there. They're in the hunt. Or do the Blue Bloods go, hey, that's a nice story. You guys are good and all that. But guess what? It still comes down to the Louisvilles, the Dukes, the Carolinas, the Virginias, the Florida States of the world.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Kicking game, a big reason that Miami was able to turn things around.
Borregales.
First team All-American.
This is a reflection of the confidence that Diaz has in this guy.
He does have a cannon for a leg.
Man, he's Sunday ready. And he drive one through from 56.
Oh, wow. How about,
are you kidding me?
Winner of the Lou Groza Award is Jose Borregales from Miami.
He's got a cannon, all right. Dude can kick it. All right, let's not mess around. Let's go right to the side of the road, somewhere on the Florida Turnpike. He joins us live, and I hope that one of Florida's finest doesn't show up and go, hey, fella, what are you doing? And just tell him, hey, you're on the Packer and Durham show. Jose, first of all, congratulations. I hope you're safe on your way to a workout.
Oh, of course. Got to be safe first.
Yeah, you know, I barely recognize you without all the paint, man. You're clean cut. You look like $1 million, man. Life's good, right?
I mean, I was on TV yesterday, so, you know, I got to look my best.
I love it.
Hey, Jose, this I know the script is always a little weird when it's a transfer situation from FIU to Miami and things like that, but I can't imagine it could work out any better than it has for you this year.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. You know, I had no idea that I was going to have the season that I did, but, you know, I worked very hard this offseason, even through quarantine, and, you know, it paid off in the end.
All right, so in terms of the next step, no pun intended here for you, you said you're going to go and start working on workouts. So what does a field goal kicker work on between now and then? I mean, you can make it from 65 with your eyes closed. So I know you refine your skills. So what specifically do you work on between now and the NFL draft?
Just, you know, tuning up anything in my technique. You know, I have to be a little bit more accurate, hit the balls a little bit cleaner. So, you know, just working on that to show the scouts and NFL GMs that I can do it at the next level.
Well, you know, the one thing you do that the NFL GMs will love is the fact that you put somebody at midfield and all of a sudden they're in scoring range. The National Football League, accuracy is important, but distance is king. So, how important is distance for you? Because obviously you've got, if not in that category, one of the strongest legs in the college game, and I think could arrive in the NFL with one of the strongest legs at that level.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think accuracy is more important. But, you know, for me, having the leg strength that I do, you know, I'm blessed to have this skill set, that I'm accurate, and I also have a strong leg. So just working on long distance accuracy would be the best thing to do, to be honest.
Jose, what's tougher, left to right or right to left wind?
Right to left, because for a righty kicker, your balls are always going to fall left a little bit. So I think right to left is a little bit harder than left to right.
All right. I went out on that limb before the season started because I had seen you kick a little bit when you were at Florida International. And when you mashed that one at Louisville on national TV, I told Packer, I said, this guy could break the single season, the record for the longest kick in ACC history. You didn't get that only because you didn't get a chance, and that's probably a good thing given how good you were offensively. So if we're backing up today on the way to the workout, we're going to go out there, stretch, hit a few to get warm, and then we're going to see how far back we can go. How far back will we go where you say, okay, this might be the ceiling today?
It just depends on the day, you know. Some days I'm hitting 65 yarders like it's nothing. Other days it takes a little bit of effort to hit them. So it just depends on the day. Today we'll see how I do out there, and you know, I'll send you guys a video if you guys want.
Yeah, please do. We definitely want that. Now listen, we're sitting here in the comfort of home. It's lousy weather here in North Carolina. Wes has got terrible weather down there in Georgia. As far as the next level, from a kicking perspective, and I know you have no control over this whatsoever.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'd probably be sweet if the Dolphins picked you, right, as opposed to, I don't know, Buffalo. I know you're going to go whoever picks you, but from a kicking mentality, I mean, how do you kind of go through that process, or does it matter at all?
Honestly, I don't think it matters at all. Just, you know, for kickers, a shot is all you need. An open door is the best opportunity for a kicker. So, you know, I'm ready to play wherever, play for whoever, and, you know, hopefully they give me that shot.
Jose, you were the first Miami All-America, first Associated Press All-America pick since 2004. You're the first Miami kicker. Hard to believe with Carlos Huerta and some of these other guys, you're the first Miami kicker to win the Lou Groza Award. What does that mean to you as a guy that grew up in South Florida and kind of, you know, sees this program as a whole, not just as a one-stop situation?
I mean, it's a tremendous honor. You know, it still hasn't hit me yet. It'll probably hit me later on this week. But, you know, I'm just blessed to be in the position I am. And, you know, I put in a lot of hard work into my craft, and to finally see it pay off, you know, it's the best feeling in the world.
All right, so we know we can make one from 65 with your right foot. What's the range with the left foot? Can you kick it anywhere, left-footed or not?
With my soccer background, I used to use my left foot a lot, so I haven't used it in a while, but I say like a good 30 yards.
30 yards.
Wow.
Good 30 right. yards.
And the reason I ask you that question, because when I was playing golf in college 100 years ago, and I'm naturally left-handed, I would always like to tinker right-handed just to see what it would look like and feel like, because eventually you need that shot. I know you're not going to do that in the NFL and say, hey, I got this. Fact, this is so easy, I'm going to kick it left-footed. But I'm always curious with kickers, can you go the other way and what the range is? So the fact that you played soccer makes a ton of sense. So that's kind of a no-brainer on that front. That's cool.
Yeah.
By the way, that combination you guys had at Miami between you and the punter, now you might have had the most unique – a kicker combination in the country. I mean, you guys had to love that combo, right?
Oh yeah, of course. We loved it. We loved the attention. Just, you know, it made us a better reason to go out there and perform. You know, Lou is a great guy. He's a great punter, and he's coming back next year to UM. So I'll see him do great things over there next year.
Jose, take us through the next couple months here. We know that there's a combine. Kicking is a part of the NFL combine. You talk about training. How important will that be? And then I know facility visits with teams are also a critical element as you head to the draft.
Yeah, so right now I'm heading to Orlando, do some pre-draft training there. I got the Senior Bowl coming up, so I'll fly out to Mobile, Alabama, do my stuff over there. then come back to Miami and continue training until pro day. You know, hopefully I get invited to the combine, but we'll see. We'll see if that happens. And, you know, and then just get ready for pro day after that. It's just training with the teams. Hopefully they pick me up after that.
I think you're going to be just fine. By the way, I know you made the transfer to the U. We asked this to every student athlete. What was your hardest class at Miami?
Hardest class. To be honest, I don't really know. I think all of them are pretty easy to be at, just because they're such amazing teachers and professors there that, you know, they're always there to help. So every class was pretty much easy. I mean, I ended up with like a 3.9 GPA, and I'm still going. I'm still taking classes now. So.
Well, congratulations on all your success, and hopefully we haven't caused any disruptions there on the turnpike. It sounds like everybody's flying by you pretty quick, so you can get done with this interview and go about your business, my man. But again, congratulations, and we look forward to watching that video you send to us.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. Muffet McGraw is going to join us here momentarily. We look forward to that. Tell you what, old Jose is going to make himself some cash, isn't he, Wes? Seriously. He got a chance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got a chance. I'm really interested, and I know we do a little bit of coverage on ESPN side with the Senior Bowl in Mobile. I'm really interested to see kind of some of the dynamics that are going to play out there on a couple different fronts. And Borgalis is one. Just kind of in the touch and go I have with the National Football League doing the Falcons pack, I can tell you now, he is a guy that has kind of caught the eye of a lot of folks now, because his ability to bang it from distance. Accuracy, he's got the accuracy part. That's not the issue. The distance thing, it's like, I'll give you an example on the NFL level. Justin Tucker of the Ravens is a guy who, you know, came out of school and could go from right 60 from the jump, right? Borgalis has got that kind of leg. Harrison Butker at Kansas City, who played at Georgia Tech, he's a guy that, you know, is 50 plus, who's pretty consistent from that distance. When they see that at the National Football League, they look at saying, okay, well, if we get to the 37, we got a chance to score on every possession. And that's really kind of where Borgalis is started to draw the line for these guys. So I think he's going to be a very interesting case study at the Senior Bowl. I expect in Mobile it'll be cold, it'll be windy, and if he performs well there, kickers are not attractive or sexy picks, as we all know, on draft day, although Tampa took one of the Aguayos a couple of years ago, didn't work out. So I don't think he'll be a first-day guy, might not be a second-day guy, but he would be somebody I would keep an eye on for sure.
Well, Sebastian Janikowski says, hold my beer, right? And the rest of the
season. Oh, he's great. He was unbelievable.
And he kicked for 800 years. In fact, he still may be kicking,
yes,
for all I know. But nevertheless, Jose's going to make somebody happy, because I think he'll be in the NFL for a long, long time. It just feels that
you
way.
You bet.
Yeah. All right, let's bring on a legend. Let's bring on a legend. And we love having her as part of our ACC.
Wonder how the flowers are doing. Wonder how the garden's doing in January in South Bend. Coach, do we need an update on the garden before we get started? How's the garden in January?
Well, we got a little snow. Yeah, just a little snow. I'm planting my seedlings inside this year.
Coach, I got to be honest with you. When we did our award-winning holiday Christmas special, you were a part of it, and I was so disappointed that you confirmed that you had the fake tree and left us early to go do fake Christmas cookies. So did all that work out during the holidays? Have you still got everybody faked out on that deal or not?
Well, I don't know. The packaging, really, I got to work on that.
You got time on that. All right, let's get to hoops. You know, we talk about the men's side. There really isn't an alpha dog. It's the exact opposite with the ladies. All right, we got two teams in this league right now with Louisville and NC State that have got Final Four, national championship caliber teams. It is interesting how different the men and the women, top to bottom, seem to be in this league this particular year.
You know, I think that happens often in the women's side. You don't see the top 25 really changing too much at the top. The top 10 remain the same almost weekly. It's really a matter of who has the best players, and they're generally going to win a lot of the games. And I think you see that in the ACC. We have two teams that are further ahead and definitely in more of an elite class than the rest of the league. You mentioned Louisville and NC State. And NC State, to me, they're so veteran. You know, they have no freshmen that are playing significant minutes for them. They do have a grad transfer, you know, but she's 22, so she's fit in really well. Louisville's got a lot of young players that they're playing, but they're led by a senior who just happens to be the preseason player of the year.
Coach, when we watched those games last night, I remarked to Pac, we had four games. Three of them were four or less. The Clemson-Georgia Tech game was a 12-point game. We saw really good individual performance. We saw Dana Evans do Dana Evans things. What else did we learn last night in the women's card?
Well, there was a heartbreaker in Chestnut Hill that I'm still trying to get over. And I have to say, I slept a little better than I would have had I been on the sideline. But what a heartbreaker for Notre Dame last night. And a great win for Boston College. They really needed that. That was almost a must-win game this early in the season for them. They've got the toughest schedule in the league. They're playing NC State and Louisville twice. They've got to play Syracuse twice. So for them to get that win, I think that really is going to be a dose of confidence for them. Georgia Tech with a little bit of a surprise. I think they're playing really well. How do you talk about somebody that had 20 rebounds last night? Kubai really had a great game. And they took care of Clemson, which that surprised me a little bit because I think they're two pretty evenly matched teams. But Virginia Tech giving Louisville a game. Wasn't sure if that was going to go into overtime. That one really was close at the end. And like you said, Pac, you go to Dana Evans, and she's going to take care of things for you.
Coach, there seems to also be – we talk about, you know, Louisville and NC State at the top. Syracuse obviously been consistently ranked in the top 25 all year. But then this next cluster, right? You mentioned Georgia Tech and Clemson, pretty equal. You mentioned North Carolina playing well. Notre Dame, even despite the loss last night. Wake Forest. I mean, the list could – you probably put Virginia Tech in, even though they've gotten off to a tough start in terms of wins and losses. But that cluster of teams, if you can kind of crystal ball, who do you think emerges from that group that kind of joins the Syracuse to say, guess what? You know what? We're going to have to be a factor here coming down the stretch to compete against Louisville and NC State.
I'm going to go with North Carolina. I think their only problem is that they're just so young. They've got six new players out of their top seven. Four of them are freshmen. Two of them are grad transfers. So they don't have a lot of veterans on their team, but boy, do they have talent. Their freshman class is terrific, playing a lot of people, a lot of minutes. They've got good depth coming off the bench. They're going to be a little inconsistent just because of their youth, but I think they're a team that's talented enough. And then I think Georgia Tech, they've kind of been battle-tested. They've beaten Boston College, who's a team that, despite their record, I think they're a really good team in this conference. So it is up for grabs, but those teams that can defend have a little better chance against the ones that are shooting the ball so poorly right now. And it looks that way in the league, that three-point shooting has just not been great. We have a couple of teams that are shooting it well, but nobody else really is scoring a lot of points from the outside.
I want to ask you, in many respects, we talked to Courtney Banghart day before yesterday, and in our visit, she talked about having a conversation with Katie Meyer about just kind of the way they're having to go through this season. Of all the changes that you've seen in the game, how many times have you heard from someone who said, hey, I'm just looking to make sure I can get to next week, let alone, you know, a month from now. How difficult is it in the coaching acumen to break your system, if you will?
Well, I picked a great year to retire, didn't I? You know, when you look at that crystal ball was working for me. It's incredibly difficult. You know, as coaches, the one thing you want to do is be in control. That is the personality of almost every coach I know. And for them, it's not even looking at the week ahead. It's looking at the day ahead. Mm-hmm. And they're waiting for every test result. You know, let's see how this looks today. And then you throw in an injury every now and then. it just, everything is so uncertain and it's difficult. And that's where I think the veteran teams and the veteran coaches have a huge advantage. I think it's a little bit better for them. Players, you know, when you're a senior, you know, you're going to get hit some bumps in the road and you're going to be able to get over it. But for freshmen, just living in this world right now, I think is so mentally challenging. And the players that have the good mental toughness are going to be able to get through it. But when you look at this generation, there's not a lot of grit. There's not a lot of mental toughness. Their parents have paved the road. They've plowed the road. They've fixed everything in the path of these kids. And now this is something they have to deal with. They can't have someone else fix it for them. And it's just so much more pressure on the head coach and the assistant coaches. But the head coach, she's watching over her assistant coaches. She's watching over everybody in that tier one bubble. And that is a lot of anxiety on one person.
Yeah,
Coach, you know, you mentioned you picked a great year to retire. And you've also mentioned, you know, the Notre Dame-BC game last night, which BC comes off of, what, 16-1 run to win the game by three. And I want to, again, I don't want to do this to you, but I'm going to do this to you because I think it's always an interesting case study with coaches. I'm going to allow you to be the coach again. And you know what? You just lost last night by three on the road, and you saw a 16-1 run to end the game. How long does it take to get over that? Because you mentioned you probably don't sleep, right? I mean, that's one of those, you one play here, one right. stop there, you know, a poor execution. I mean, we can come up with a thousand things here. How hard is it as the head coach to have a game like that? And I mean, I know you got to put it rear view mirror and it's a windshield mentality. Dabo talks about that all the time. He's right. But how hard is that as a head coach when you have a night like that?
Well, I mean, it's painful. It is literally painful. It's almost, you know, people talk about it's like death. You know, you just, for me, it was so hard to get over that. And that's where, you know, you really need to be able to put it behind you. But it's easy to say, hard to do. You go through the game, and I usually would watch the game like three times. You know, I'd watch it first, a lot of emotion, and then I'd go back, I'd watch it again, and I'd see all of these plays that we could have changed. And that's the hardship of playing in a close game. I'd rather lose by 10 or 12, you know, because then you're not going to pick that one play where you think this is where we lost the game. I mean, they could not get the ball in bounds off the press. Boston College, a team that, you know, with at 0-4, when they got things rolling and the momentum went their way, there was just no stopping them. They're a veteran team. They were poised down the stretch. But for Notre Dame, trying to get the ball in bounds, they had a 2-on-1 fast break opportunity, threw the ball out of bounds. They had shot clock violations down the stretch. They were a little unorganized. And they don't have a great point guard. And I think that's, of course, always an issue. Trying to get the ball in bounds, everybody trying to do a little bit, but nobody really took control. And Boston College, boy, they took control down the stretch. And that is really hard. You look at the things and you say, what's fixable? And, you know, what's not. And we got to fix the things that we can. And we do have to move on. But it's really hard. And I wouldn't want to be my team at practice today when I walked in the gym.
By the way, I know you don't miss those sleepless nights, though, right? I mean, because I got to figure there have been a few that you just went, you know, the sun's coming up and I'm watching the game for the 500th time going, a bounce pass, give and go, pick and roll, whatever it might be. Enjoy that garden because you know what? You put in the work. You've earned the right to just say, hey, Coach Ivy, that would be a you problem now. Go handle that yourself.
Yeah, that's what my husband and I keep saying, like, not our problem anymore. But, God, in my heart, it is my problem. I just am really struggling with this.
Part of the DNA.
Muffet, can I say before we finish this, and we are very appreciative of you joining us here this morning, that I am so pleased that my partner has not asked you to contribute one of those basketballs behind you on the shelf to his basement at this juncture. I mean, the fact that he hasn't asked you to send him something off this shelf is unbelievable. And almost, look, well, now he's got a ball, but it's not one of those balls, Pack. You just got a basketball. That's not one of those balls. I mean,
you know,
Muffet, he hadn't asked you to send him anything is unbelievable.
I heard of some of the things that have been sent to you, and I understand the liquid gifts are a little more
Well, I will just say this, Muffet. Number one, I'm glad you didn't send me any of those fake cookies you were pawning off on our Christmas special. So if you want to, if you want to come off the hip with some of that bubbly that you never busted open winning all those games, you can send it down here. We got all kinds of bubbly. We got,
look at this.
Dan Radakovich sent us this right here. This is a national championship bubbly. Haven't even been opened yet. I got all kinds of stuff down here. Oh, yeah.
Hey, what about Jen Hoover sending you the beverages pack?
There we go. Jen Hoover sent us Winston-Salem's very famous Sutler's Gym. So we got that going for us right there. So, hey, Coach, whenever you're ready, you know, you just let us know.
See, and I'm sorry. Muffet, I apologize. I apologize for this. I knew eventually he was going to try and shill for something. I'm sorry.
It's all for the network, Coach. It's all about the network.
South Bend chocolates.
Oh,
right.
Done deal.
I am so excited to see Jim Phillips taking over. By the way, I worked with him at Notre Dame, and he is such a great guy. That is going to be so fun to see that.
Yeah, I thought that was a win-win proposition. Uh oh, watch out! Fake turnover.
Look out!
Turnover.
Look out.
We got a turnover. We're going to have another sleepless morning.
It's early for me.
Sleepless morning for the host. I love it.
Yes.
An unforced error. That'll be a practice drill.
Well, keep up the good work.
Thanks,
it's great having you on our team.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. Power Hour gets started here in about 10 minutes. And we still have... Was a loot of guests? Is that what you determined it was? A loot of guests?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. How you doing on that meteorological deal? You figured out who you want to get? Larry Sprinkle, the weather moose, or David Chandley involved? Whatever.
I told you, my relationship with local weather people is not healthy. It's not good. I'll be completely transparent. Okay. I normally get along with others, but the weather people just don't. We just it doesn't work too well.
All right. Coming up, Presley Harvin III and Carlos Boozer in the Power Hour today on Packer and Durham. We'd like to welcome you to the transaction portion of the program, right? On a Friday, it's time for the transactions.
Good
right
news.
Back.
This is good news transaction,
too. Yeah, there is some good news. Let's start with those that are going to be on the football field in 2021 at the collegiate level and in the Atlantic Coast Conference. And we'll start with Clemson. James Skalski will return for the Tigers. The Clemson linebacker had some injury problems this year, but when he was on the field, he and the cowboy collar delivered the goods. And so Skalski is going to come back to play another year. No truth to the rumor that this will be his 11th year at Clemson. Just seems that way. But no, he is a big piece of what Brent Venables will have defensively for sure.
This is really good news for Dabo. You know, there is a chance, Wes. Let me just put things in perspective and let this marinate a second. There is a chance that James Skalski, by his announcing he's coming back, will have an opportunity to go to six college football playoffs.
That's right.
Is that crazy? Yeah.
Six. Well, it's because you got bonus waivers. We got waivers everywhere. We got coupons. Everybody's enacting the coupon.
I get that, but let that marinate us a chance. I didn't say he's in it. I mean, Clemson's got to get there first.
Right.
But if the Tigers do their deal and get back to the college football play, he will have gone to six different college football playoffs. That may go down all time as a record that will never be touched. Just let that marinate a second. Six.
That's correct. No doubt. All right, here we go with the other return, and this is a good one, too. In fact, you could say this one might kind of seal up the contenders. Tamon Fox will return for the 2021 season at Carolina. Let him in sacks, let him in tackles for loss. And it also means now that 10 of 11 are back on defense for the Tar Heels, and you see Fox trails Greg Ellis, Julius Peppers, Marcus Jones, I love you, and Quentin Copels on the career sack list, and he is tied at Lawrence Taylor. He was pretty good.
That's a pretty good list of players right there now. Huh? Seriously.
Think so?
Yes,
I do.
Sir.
Holy smokes.
Better believe it.
And Tamon Fox, with a really productive year, has got a chance to catch Greg Ellis out of East Wake High School in Wendell, North Carolina, for the all-time sack numbers at Carolina. Now, this was tweeted out by Ross Martin and others yesterday. Carolina now will have a Heisman candidate at quarterback. The returning offensive line is back. The offensive line returns in whole pack, all five. Wide receiver now, Deami Brown will be gone. But remember, we talked about Josh Downs, Choffrey Brown. You know, they're going to have some wide receivers. 10 of 11 back on defense. That's where Carolina is going to spring ball. They will be a team to watch.
Yeah, I think Clemson and North Carolina next year are going to get a ton of love in all your preseason mags and conversations and all that stuff. The question will be for our conference, who else is in the mood to join them, right? I mean, NC State's going to feel pretty good about life, I think. I think the Miami Hurricanes, knowing that De'Aaron King's coming back, is going to feel pretty good about life. And then I think, you know, the next tier, who's ready to kind of jump into that mix as well. But we'll have plenty of time to decipher all that. But it's finally good to see some news of not who's opting out or who's taking their baggage and moving on to the next level. It's cool to see stories of kids that go, you know what, the college experience is pretty good, and we got a chance to be pretty good. So let's come back and play some more football. Right. I love that.
I don't want to stomp on your buzz there about guys coming back, but – Brevin Jordan went to social media yesterday after, I thought, a week or so ago, saying he was going to stay at Miami, and now is going to the draft. So I'm not quite sure what transpired there. There was the, you know, very traditional social media statement, but Brevin Jordan is going to declare, and has declared, rather, for the 2021 NFL draft. So the tight end at Miami will not be returning for Manny Diaz. When I thought, Pack, didn't we about 10 days, 2 weeks ago, didn't Brevin Jordan say he was kind of coming back? Did I misinterpret something there?
Well, listen, you know, you do what you have to do, right? We wish all these guys the very best that want to go on and pursue their career. And again, I don't fault anybody for chasing their dream. I don't care if it's football, a radio, TV, talk show host, insurance agent, man, you go chase it. And if you think you're ready, go for it. That's why we live in the greatest country in the world.
That's right. Just remember this, Pack. It's like they said in Varsity Blues. Things change, Mox. Things change.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing doesn't change. The Power Hour is next. That doesn't change.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.